Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. So, our stream of discussion on the beautiful writings of Bhagwan continue. We were in the second chapter of Sandhya Nivarini in the previous episode. In fact, the last two episodes, we've been discussing the second chapter of Sandhya Nivarini. We discussed the second segment, segment 2.2 as we called it, in the previous episode. And we had Brother K.M. Ganesh with us, as well as Brother Bhargav, and we just started that discussion. We discussed the first part of this. There is so much more to contemplate on what Bhagwan has written. So we will listen once again to what Bhagwan has gifted us in the second segment of Sandhya Nivarini. So I'll play for you 2.2, and then we will move on also, if time permits, to the third chapter, chapter 3.1. Today, by Bhagwan's grace, we have in the studios, along with Brother K.M. Ganesh, who was there last two episodes, we have Brother Srinivas Rao, a former student of Bhagwan's university, who has been serving in the hospital for probably 2.5 to 3 decades. And he is someone who has had the chance to interact with Bhagwan physically, someone who has had the chance to see Bhagwan at very close quarters. It's really a blessing that we have him today for this discussion on Prema Vahini, Sandhya Nivarini. So, with prayers at his lotus feet, let's listen to the second chapter, the second segment of chapter 2 of Sandhya Nivarini, and we'll pray Swami to guide this discussion.
Swami, isn't it that many believers are becoming atheists because of such people? Is there no weapon to put down these people who, without any regard to the knowledge they have acquired or the position they have gained, and making no attempt to know the reality, abuse the Mahapurushas, the enlightened ones?
Yes, it is there. There is a saying, a load of rags is placed on a ragged saddle. The words of such persons will be listened to by those who are like them. No real believer will associate with them. Even if they do, they will move away as soon as they understand that those stories are fictitious. So the weapon to put down these people is in their own hands. Haven't you heard the story of Bhasmasura? Placing his hand on everyone's head, he reduced them to ashes. Finally, placing it on his own head, he himself was reduced to ashes. Similarly, as they continue to accuse others, their own words will come back to them like sharp arrows of accusations to them. In this world, those who find fault with the Lord are of four types. 1. People who repulse with things connected to God. 2. People who, on account of individual spite, cannot tolerate another's greatness. 3. Those who have neither personal experience, nor contact, nor knowledge of anything related to the divine, and so merely manufacture stories based on hearsay to which they have become enslaved. 4. Persons who come with some worldly desire and who accuse the Lord as an excuse for failure caused by their own destiny. Only these four types of people clamor, as you say, the others don't. Even if they do not like or have no faith, they analyze and satisfy themselves with their own conclusions, but don't become puppets in others' hands. They don't abuse others. The qualities of those people are not on the right path, who do not trust themselves and give room to others' opinions. There is no point arguing with those who are ignorant of the reality. In fact, reality needs no argumentation. To argue with those who are neither completely ignorant nor fully knowledgeable is like seeing the trunk and concluding everything about the body, as in the story of the blind men and the elephant. My boy, it is not desirable to spend time in this type of conversation. Abuse and fault finding are natural and common. Having known this, those who aspire to become true bhaktas should search only for bases on which to build their ananda. All the available time should be used for holy purposes and not be wasted. You have nothing to do with the good and the bad in others. Instead of wasting the time, you should utilize it to discard the bad and develop the good in you. Ask me about those things which will help you to cultivate devotion in you, and about messages that will aid you in your spiritual progress. Hereafter, do not bring near me such stories of false acquisitions and unholy criticism indulged in by others. You too should not take in such things.
All this happened because we too have the same human nature. But now, with your answers, I understand it correctly. Courage and joy have entered into me and driven away the sorrows and doubts I had. Because of utterances by such people, even the little faith, devotion, and earnestness that men have gets lost. That was the reason for me to ask you these questions. Otherwise, I have also nothing to do with them. Pardon me, hereafter I won't converse on these lines with you.
Very good. During the little time available, if you don't think of some good subject, but merely recollect the ignorant prattle of others, it is as if you too joined in blaming those persons. That is harmful to devotees. Whatever others may say, we must not leave our reality. If we are steadfast on this, we will never be in want, now or ever. One argument after another results only in anger and pain. Bhakti Marga is meant to suppress such qualities and not to aggravate them. Those who listen to such accusers and lose their faith and devotion will not be like that for long. Once they become aware of the truth, will they believe the accusers again? Will they go by their words? The talk of those fault finders is as the sound of bronze. Cheap metals make more sound. Gold, which does not make sound, is valuable. For true devotees, it is best to be quiet, follow the path of silence, and engage their lips in the repetition of the name of the Lord, giving no scope for any other discussion to enter into them. So, you should not permit the words of the bronze-voiced persons to enter your ears. Fill them instead with the name of the Lord, which is like pranava, the primordial sound. Next month, if you get any queries regarding such useful topics such as sadhana or discipline, come here and have them solved. But do not bring with you bundles of such doubts.
Swami, I am indeed blessed. Through them, you have vouchsafed to me the light of wisdom. Seeing all this, I feel that the saying, "All is for our good," is true. Henceforward, whatever anyone may say, I will be patient and won't take it in, because all is for our good. Namaskaram. Allow me to take leave.
So, there is so much that has been discussed here. I think if you see the second chapter, the second segment, I think last time we discussed about how the four kinds of people, Swami says, who find fault with the Lord, isn't it, Ganesh?
Yes, yes.
And after that, here Bhagwan is saying that one very important thing that Swami is stressing at two places here. One is there is no point arguing with those who are ignorant of the reality, Swami is saying. In fact, reality needs no argumentation. And he says there is no point talking to anyone who is either complete, only if, you know, to argue with those who are neither completely ignorant nor fully knowledgeable, Swami says, is like seeing the trunk and concluding everything about the body, as in the story of the blind man and the elephant. So, I think that is something we have to keep in mind when we are talking about Bhagwan, when we are discussing spirituality, isn't it?
Yes. In fact, in one of the discourse, Swami told, one of the signs of being a human being is you trust your own experience.
Mm. Yes.
That is one of the first signs that you are a human being.
Yes.
Means you have yourself experienced, have faith in your own experience at least.
Yes.
Then only you are a human being. Swami has told.
Yeah.
Correct.
And one problem which last time we had pointed out with Kali Yuga is, which comes in Ramcharitmanas, that people will only believe what they can see. Means they believe only in tangibility. And if they are not able to perceive it, they say it does not exist.
Yeah.
Whereas the definition of faith, many of the gurus, masters have told, faith is something, you have faith in something which you cannot see.
Mm-hmm.
The gift is you start seeing what you used to have faith in.
Yes.
That is the gift that comes.
Faith is to see the invisible.
Invisible.
And the reward of a faith is to...
You actually see.
Believe in the invisible, and the reward is to see that.
See the...
Yes.
So, but he has also not encouraged blind faith.
Yeah.
Yes.
It is... what I like most about Swami's talks is this only, that he always encourages people to build their faith on based on their own experiences. He used to say, come, challenge me, test me.
Yeah.
Know for yourself the truth and base your faith on that. So that's the best part of this Bhagwan.
Yes.
Who is, you know, he's not like, you know, he's favorable only to those who believe him. He is throwing open the challenge and saying, come down, see for yourself. I remember the editor of Blitz, Mr. Karanjia, used to be writing every weekend on Saturdays some critical commentary on Swami. And it was the selling paper just for that piece. At the end of the paper, in the last page, it used to be about Satya Sai Baba. And such a person, he probably wanted to know for himself what this matter is actually.
At least he was someone who decided that, okay, let me now, instead of going by hearsay, go and find out in first person.
Yes. So, after that, he is a completely transformed person.
Yes.
Many people fall into this prey, actually.
Yes.
That they, not without knowing the truth, they talk.
Yes. With half-baked knowledge or with knowledge from third parties.
Yes.
You speak.
Even in most of the satsang, actually, why people actually gather for satsang, if you see all around, they want to hear about Swami, they want to listen to it. But, see, if you just listen, it's like this, Swami says, there's a difference between when you like me and when you love me. You like something, you may not practice, you know, loving Swami says is, if you're practicing my teaching, is your actual gratitude of saying that you are loving me.
Yeah.
That's what, there's a difference between like and love.
Yes.
Now, when in satsang, for example, if it's my, I would say a refiner ego, which says, okay, I love God, and God has come in this form, and anybody who praises him, I like him. Okay, but when, as sir pointed out, that you should trust your own experience, one beautiful thing that happens is when you're putting a condition to God, God, this should happen, then I believe.
Mm.
When a person actually does it, no, he has to consciously live a very sincere life, because the sincerity comes in his whole approach towards life.
Yes.
And that is more important than attending hundreds of satsang. You might attend hundreds of satsang, you might listen to so many people's experience, yet people say that why things are not changing in my life is because, as you pointed out very correctly, that start, you know, it is not that I'm challenging that he or she is God, the divinity is God.
Yeah.
I'm not with that attitude I'm doing. I sincerely want to experience divinity. So hence, you say, start giving me. So as Swami said, put the conditions. Mm-hmm. You know, I will answer all the. If you put 10 conditions, I'll satisfy all the 10 conditions. Yeah. But again, we should not get into the business of putting 11th condition. Then you are doubting Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Because for one thing, once you have an experience, no, nobody can take away that experience from
you. Yes.
And once you have it, your life is.
And I've also seen that if you are building your faith based on somebody else's experience and belief, if that person falls, you fall with him.
Yeah.
So, yes. If you want to.
That's the danger. That's a big danger.
It's better you have your own faith.
Own faith.
Once you are convinced, nothing on earth can touch and shake your faith.
Absolutely.
That is what Swami is encouraging, because Swami is not encouraging any bhakti, foolish type of behaviors. He wants you to know the truth, seek the truth.
Yes.
That is his main aim, to instill that in his devotee.
And so then going back that we, if you were to realize our human nature, start trusting your experience first.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
In fact, I have come across some people who had a one-to-one experience with Bhagavan, yet because they are listening to so many people, no? Their faith has got shaken up.
Yes, I think that's
means they've forgotten their own experience, and they're giving value and weightage to people just because probably they are holding some prominent position, either outside. I mean, that is one big mistake many people do. You know, they give more weightage to the world which is out than the world which is inside.
Yes.
Okay. Their own world.
True. Absolutely. In fact, what you are referring to now is what Bhagavan has touched upon in the next chapter of Sandhya Nivarini, outside and inside. But here I think that point is so beautifully stressed by Bhagavan. Swami is saying what also will happen is you will get into anger. See, if you start argumentation, Swami says that can lead you to anger and pain. Because many times, you know, you might start talking about divinity and Swami to someone, and that argumentation, that whole process of conversation may not go in the right direction. And then you can lose your cool. And Swami says that is not what should happen if you are on the bhakti marga. The bhakti marga is meant to suppress your anger and your hatred and your pain and all that. So
it in fact gets transmuted. The whole emotion gets transmuted.
So you're losing it actually. So I think those are very. So I think we have to be very careful in with whom we talk, how we talk, and the receptivity of the person with whom we are discussing, isn't it?
Yes. You know, even Swami is telling you not to get into any argumentations also with those people.
Yes.
Because those people are only making noise.
Correct.
Why do you want to lose your own peace of mind?
Peace, yes.
And all the benefits that you have got from your faith.
Yes.
So, you know, like there is one aphorism which says that difference between a theist and atheist is God is playing hide and seek. To some he is visible, to some he is not.
Yes.
To the one who is not visible, what's the point in fighting with him?
Yes.
It is God's play that he is not going to be visible to him for his evolution.
For some time.
In this life, for some time.
Yes.
The basis of everybody's existence is very much God and divine.
Yes.
The core of our existence and the life and our soul state is that it is pure and sacred. And that is oozing divinity only. There is nothing, means you cannot deny that.
Yes.
Once you know your own self. Swami also says that I know who I am. If you know yourself, you will know me.
Yes. True.
So that is, Swami is again telling, again it's not as a worship me as God.
Yes.
First know yourself, you will know
who I am.
God.
Yes.
And then you will know Swami.
True.
Wonderful guidelines.
Absolutely. And see, the other thing Swami is saying here is, the people who are accusing or who do not have faith, Swami says that they will not be like that for long. It is a short phase.
Yeah.
I mean, that is confirmed.
Swami also says, now people say there is no God.
There is.
First comes there is.
Yes. Yes.
Then only you can say it is not there.
Yes.
Because something is there, you say it's not there.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the whole thing is lost.
In fact, right now I'm reminded of a story where Buddha was sitting and his disciple was sitting next to Buddha, and one person comes and he asks Buddha, does God exist? Buddha says, yes, God exists. Then that person goes away. The second person comes. He asks the same question. Does God exist? And Buddha's response is, no, God does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
Then the third person comes.
Mm-hmm.
He also asks the same question. Does God exist? And Buddha doesn't reply. He's mm-hmm. silent.
Mm-hmm.
So the disciple is amazed. What is this? Why Buddha has given three different answer for the identical same question? Okay.
Yes.
So later, at the end of the day, he goes to Buddha and says, Master, I'm totally confused.
Mm.
For the same question, how can you give three different answers?
Mm.
Then Buddha says, the first person who came, I know his inner nature. The moment those were the gifts of masters, always the master one shot, they know who the person is front. So he says, inner core nature was whatever you say, especially Mahapurusha says something, no, he'll believe.
Mm.
Okay. So he was of that internal composition.
Mm.
So when I said, yes, God exists, so I know that he will go with the belief that God exists and his life is taken care. The second person who came, whatever is told to him, he'll try to prove the opposite. Okay. That is his nature. Especially when it comes from the so-called masters.
You want to challenge
He wants to challenge. So when I say God does not exist, his whole effort will be to prove that God exists, which is good for him. So that's why I told God does not exist.
Mm.
And for the third person who came, his nature is to explore answer from everywhere. He read a lot of books, he'll go to so many places.
Mm.
But ultimately he'll believe what comes from within himself.
Wow.
So that's why I kept quiet.
Mm.
Because he will ask, but the fact that I kept quiet will implore him to introspect. And from within he'll know that God exists. So in all the three situations, Lord Buddha, what he did, directed them towards God only.
Yes.
So it is not the answer or technicality of the answer that is important, because the masters, they see the effect, the chain effect that is going to happen on each individual, because they know a person or a situation in a larger or a deeper or a real perspective.
Yes.
So what they do has got millions of reasons.
Absolutely.
Swami was also in this while responding also, he would be like this only.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes you will feel he's contradicting.
Apparently.
But that is, as you said rightly, he's responding according to the person in front of him.
Person's
condition, the evolution, whatever.
What is in the best interest of
God,
that individual?
Everything is fine.
Yeah.
If your hypothesis is that God is existing, you will come to the conclusion he exists. If your hypothesis is he does not exist, he will not exist. The beauty is there is a thesis, antithesis, and a synthesis.
Hmm.
So finally, what you have to do is synthesize. So you have to accept both states. Nobody is to be blamed for not believing in God. That is required for his
evolution.
Faith.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's very true.
That is very interesting. In fact, in one discourse, Swami was saying that God has created the devotee. And the devotee also has created God. So this both are absolutely connected. I mean, this is because it is the devotee who has created a Rama, a Krishna, you know, because there is only consciousness. Basically, the devotee has created a God, Swami says.
Mm-hmm.
Because for him to connect.
Correct.
He has created.
God separated himself from himself so that he may love himself.
So because the devotee wants to perceive him in a particular manner. And Swami says that is the only reason why Sakshatkara happens. God comes down in a form because the devotee wants to perceive him in that particular form. And that's why God comes down in that form.
Mm-hmm.
So it is the devotee who has created the God.
Yeah.
His exact word, if I remember, in Bhagavad Vaini Swami says, an avatar is the crystallization of the yearning of a devotee, of a bhakta.
Yes. So that way the devotee has created God. And the devotee, of course, is a creation of God. So I think the interesting thing here, Swami is telling, is don't lose your time in argumentation. Second, ensure that that does not lead to anger, pain, and any negative qualities, because that is again detrimental to your spiritual progress. And the beautiful thing is, people who do not have faith, they are not going to be like that for long.
Mm.
They are going to someday definitely come back. And Swami is saying, once they come back, now nobody will believe whatever they had said before.
Mm.
You know, so their statements are now of no value.
Yeah, even to the students, you know, when Swami talks to them personally and guides them. In fact, he told me also in the very beginning when I joined,
uh-huh.
what you have come for, do not forget that.
Mm.
You have come for Swami, focus yourself only on that. But otherwise, we tend to get distracted
very easily
because there will be people from all walks of life. It's a cosmopolitan gathering. So, some people will have faith in Swami, some will not have.
Mm.
But all because of their good fortune have come to His lotus feet. But there is a chance of you falling astray.
That's
right. So, He used to warn us not to interact too much with anybody.
Correct.
It's very, very important guidelines because you have come for something, you know, very big in your life. You cannot afford to lose that chance.
Yes.
So, it was Swami Himself who took the pains to warn us actually. And it's very true. Don't talk to anybody.
Mm. In fact, the other thing also where Swami is telling, you know, Swami says cheap metals make more noise. And that is also so true. The people who have very little experience actually talk the most. The people who have the real experience actually prefer to be quiet.
Yeah.
You know, unless you really go seek them out, they are not willing to share with you all that. You know, because they, as Swami says, you know, you don't take your precious diamonds and golds and put it in the fish market.
Yes.
You know, you keep it in the iron safe.
Yes.
You know, because you know the value of that. Mm. And you will share with anyone only if that person understands the value of that gold and silver.
Mm.
Otherwise, you know, that whole thing loses its
charm.
Really? It loses its
value. Why for that matter, not only we wasting our wealth or our rare precious stone, precious gems, whatever we have got. Even Swami Himself says that I do not utter a word if it is not going to be useful. If it is going to be wasted.
Yes.
I don't utter a word. If you are not going to listen to me, I am not going to say anything.
Yes.
He was so careful about Himself.
Yeah. Himself, yes.
And He has not wasted His divinity even one bit.
Yes, absolutely.
Here, the analogy where Swami mentions about the elephant, no? So, see, when we come together, we all share our own experiences. So, one common thread is, like what Swami once very, very clearly told, don't never try to understand me. Okay, even if the entire humanity comes together and try for millions of years,
they will not be able
to understand what divinity is. But you enjoy the sweetness of my love. So, in every incident, no, there are two rasas which are there. One is Swami's Karuna rasa and ours, the yearning aspect of a devotee. The meeting of these, one is the God's compassion and one side is, and how it is reciprocated with the devotee's yearning. This is what we look, and if this is a common thread in all the experiences. Instead, if we start getting entangled with technicalities of when, date, this and that, you're losing the whole point. You know, you're losing the whole point.
Talking about, sorry.
Yes, yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Talking about, you were saying that how we should not try to understand Swami.
Never.
Once he came into the bhajan hall, I was just sitting there. He asked me, hey, do you understand Swami?
Mm-hmm.
Then I gave it a little thought. Then I recalled what Swami Himself said about Himself. He said, do not try to understand me. Even if you put your head down and feet up and do tapasya, you will not be able to. It will be a useless effort to understand me. So just recalling this, I said, no, Swami, I don't understand you. It actually was with a very good intent only. Swami got up and walked out in a huff. If you don't understand me, why should I waste my time here?
Oh my God.
So like, no, we have to be, he wants us also to understand
him. Understand his teaching, if I were to convey.
Yes, absolutely right.
We should
Try to understand what he is doing, why he is doing.
Yes.
That is not your business.
Yes.
Even Lord Krishna Himself said, don't do what I do, do what I say.
Say. So, If we were to say even the situation that gets created in our life, many times we don't understand why it's happening. So we just go by the faith.
Yes.
That, okay, it is for everyone's good, and that's what the fundamental discrimination Swami says, where, you know, everything is for everyone's good. You have that faith, and that even though things might not be going the way you would like it to go, but have the faith. Have the faith.
I think what is important, I think that's a very interesting thing, brother, you shared, because what we are doing now is that we are trying to put our minds with whatever little understanding we have to assimilate what Bhagavan has written. Just so that we can practice his teachings with more awareness, with more better idea of how to walk on this path. I think what we should never do is to question the words, question the message, question the direction, question an act of the divine. I think that is where, you know, you get into argumentation and
interpretation. Which has
See the dialogue between Swami and the Bhakta, Swami himself is guiding how to probe. He himself is putting himself in the situation of Bhakta and is trying to show to us how to approach. This is the way to see life. This is the way, if you want to know its inner meaning, the antarathas. Then only you will get to the goal. Otherwise, there is fraught with danger.
Absolutely.
In fact, they say introspection is not just about right thinking. It is right and deep thinking. Both have to be there.
And not just thinking. Thinking is also a problem. When you say deep thinking, it is silence, isn't it? Am I right? You go within.
You face the truth. You see the truth.
There is an awareness which is larger than your thinking.
Yes, very true. It starts with that, and then you face.
But I think what happens is, when you quieten the mind, then you slowly access the Atma. I mean, you access the heart. You access the conscience. You listen to the conscience more clearly once you quieten the mind.
Very true.
Very, very well said.
I think that is what is the sadhana. And I think just this swadhyaya helps. You know, I think many times, you just, if you don't, if your mind is agitated, just open Satya Sai Speaks and just read two, three pages. You know, your mind just quietens.
Calms down.
You know, only then we can connect to Bhagwan, connect to the conscience, and, you know, think what I should do now. What is the situation I'm in now? What is the right way forward? Because most of the times what happens is, because when we are faced with situations, our mind gets agitated. And many times we take decisions in that agitated mind, and that is when things go wrong. So what is most important, as Bhagwan also mentions in the coming segment of Sandhya Nivarani, is you have to connect within. And seek answers for yourself.
Like they say, in physics we have signal to noise ratio, sir. Signal is in the numerator, noise is in the denominator. Signal is always steady, it is constant, the voice of the conscience. If the noise is too much, we are not able to hear the signal. So all you have to do is reduce the noise. Automatically, the signal you will be able to hear the signal.
And Swami, in fact, in one discourse, distinguishes between jnana, sugyana, and pragyana. So Swami says, jnana is got to do with the knowledge of the physical world. Jnana. When you think from the perspective of the body, you know, because to acquire different skills to keep your body going, that is jnana. Sugyana is when you think, when you apply your mind to see how that body of knowledge what you have gathered, even as you do things for your personal benefit, if it is benefiting others, whatever you are doing, if it has to benefit others, then that jnana is sugyana. And only if you are able to quieten that and connect with the conscience, Swami says constantly, then it is pragyana.
Beautiful.
So we have to move from jnana, whatever we have acquired, to the stage of pragyana. In fact, in the college, that's what is happening. You acquire jnana. And then as you do research, you try to see, can I use this knowledge for others' benefit? That is sugyana. But ultimately, you know, even the whole purpose of doing that is to acquire pragyana, pragyanam brahma, where, you know, you are constantly in tune with your conscience.
Beautiful.
I think that is the journey of every vidyarthi, I would think. And we are, nobody is not a vidyarthi. I think everyone is on that path of being a student of spirituality. And here, you know, as we were talking about this, quietening the mind. So Swami says, for true devotees, it is best to be quiet.
Mm.
Follow the path of silence and engage their lips in the repetition of the name of Lord, giving no scope for any other discussion to enter. And Swami brings in the concept of pranava here. I mean, say Swami, you should not permit the words of the bronze voiced persons to enter your ears. Fill them instead with the name of the Lord, which is like pranava. The name of the Lord is like pranava.
Mm.
I think that's a very, very powerful statement Bhagwan is saying, isn't it?
Even the bhajans that we do morning and evening, Swami himself said that what do you think is just a half an hour bhajan in the morning and evening?
Mm.
It is purifying the consciousness, the ether.
Uh-huh.
At that level, it is purifying.
Cleansing.
The vibrations. Yes.
So this is the one that is the support during the,
yes,
you know, troubled times.
In fact, I think all of us have felt that, isn't it? We might be in the college and, you know, we had too many things to deal with in the college, or you are in the hospital, there are a lot of things to complete, there are a lot of work tasks to be done, but you just feel, it's okay, let's just go to Mandir and sit for half an hour. Just attend the bhajan session. You know?
Yes.
And you feel that just calms you down, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that is something that is anyone's experience,
yeah,
you know. Even if you are coming back from the factory and there are a lot of things to do, and if there is a bhajan session in the samiti, you say, okay, drop everything here. Just go and sit for half an hour bhajans.
And Swami always says, sing loudly, clap loudly.
Yes.
If you sing loudly and clap loudly, the disturbing thoughts of the,
yes,
like the birds on the tree that
tree
are perched and making noise,
yes,
they will,
yes,
disappear.
They will disappear. And that is a common experience. And through bhajan, Swami has given us a taste of the power and the bliss of Namasmarana.
Mm.
And he has made it so easy also for us.
Yes,
so
Namasmarana for us is such an interesting experience,
yes,
enjoyable,
yes,
experience.
Yes, truly my own experience also. When Swami was there, after the office hours are over, we always used to rush for bhajans.
Mm.
And there is a huge difference on the days when we come and we don't come.
Mm-hmm.
Supposing you had a very tough day and lots of disturbing thoughts or whatever tensions. Once you come to bhajans and see Swami once, whether you sing or not, if you just see him, like, it's like putting in your recycle bin all your,
yes,
troubled thoughts or whatever.
Yes.
And you go back home enjoying, you'll be enjoying your evening at home,
mm,
and the rest of the day and the night.
Mm.
But if you don't do that, you carry all the tension to the bed.
Mm.
And,
yes,
your sleep itself is disturbed.
Which has a vicious cycle.
Yes,
again. Next,
yes,
day,
yes,
again, it will be even
so
worse.
Earlier the better you go and dump everything at the feet.
Don't let it accumulate.
Yes. In fact, yes, one friend of mine gave a very, very useful tip. He said, when you go and see Swami, don't even think anything. Just see the red robe and forget. And that was a very useful tip. Just
try to be blank.
Robe. Just be blank. Don't think of anything else. Don't see anything else. Very, very useful.
Just be.
Yes.
Just be.
Just see.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can't be. But if you see, you can be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
See,
that's the beauty of the
you see. If you see, as they say, mindfulness, no?
Yeah.
If you see truly,
yeah,
without any screens in your mind,
yes,
only then you are seeing
the beauty
it.
Of the form is form and the name is that, no?
Yes.
If
Nam
you,
and Rupa.
If you take his name, if you see his form,
mm,
everything is fine.
Yes.
But left to yourself, if you are going to control your thoughts and mind, is going to be a Herculean task.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right?
Yes.
Well, that is true.
I
mean, if you want to control your thoughts, the only way to do it, I would think, you know, or when you're doing meditation, as Bhagwan said, is concentrating on one form.
Mm.
That is easy for us.
Yes.
Because I think we have not reached a stage where we can completely eliminate the mind.
Mm.
We are in the process of giving the mind a task, at least directing the mind.
Correct. From guna to nirguna. It is not directly you go to nirguna. Means you'll go into sleep otherwise. And that also Swami says, see, concentration followed by contemplation. Then meditation.
Yes.
So there's a step. Concentration, then contemplate on the virtues, you know.
Yes.
There was
all the leelas. Then
one VIP, you can call. He was seated on the veranda, and before Swami comes, you know, your attention is maximum and you're focusing and praying to Swami. And he was in meditation with closed eyes. Swami came, the sound of the door opening makes us come out of our little dhyanam. So as soon as he came, that man did not open his eyes. Swami came nearby and students, and I think his name was Hanumantaya or something. He said, Hanumantaya, that is not meditation, it is agitation. You can be with closed eyes, but you can be having a
lot of thoughts
going on inside.
Correct.
But it's better to see him and be without thoughts.
Correct.
In fact, there was one singer, I hope I'm not
taking too much
time.
No, continue.
Because one student was there who used to sing bhajans with closed eyes. And one morning before the bhajans started, Swami walked in and asked him, hey, why do you close your eyes and sing? Why did you come to Swami? Why do you pray to Swami? Why do you meditate? Why do you meditate to see God? When a God is in front of you, why do you want to close your eyes? Sing with your eyes open.
Especially when you had the physical form.
How much time are you seeing him? It's half an hour. Better make full use of it. Yes. Give that pleasure to the eyes.
And the joy, you know. And I think as a singer, you have to look at Swami, because you have to be alert to Swami's response to your bhajan, the way Swami is putting the beat, the way Swami is indicating you to continue with the bhajan.
Swami never loses an opportunity to drive home a small lesson. That's what I was saying the other day to my friend, that every moment with Swami was packed with some lesson or other. Even the mundane matters, he never wasted one moment on some simple chat. Everything was with a purpose. That was the beauty of moving with Swami. That even one more wonderful thing, one devotee said, how much time does Swami spend with you people? He is not a person who was living here. I said morning 2 hours and maybe evening 2 hours, maybe another half an hour here and there. So he said totally about 5 hours is all that he is available to you. And in 5 hours, you get to talk so much about him. Thousands and thousands of people can talk thousands of experiences. Imagine if he was to spend little more time. In this little time itself, he accomplished so much. And if you know the beauty, the punchline comes now. If you know even a little bit of what he is when he is alone, your evolution is taken care. You will know what is the truth actually. That is when Swami says, when I am alone, I am God. If you want to know about God, then try to know and see, feel for yourself what he is when he is alone.
Beautiful.
Wow. So here we know that Bhakta also is Swami. Swami is Swami in Sandhya Nivarini. And so here finally, through the voice of the Bhakta, Swami is saying that seeing all this, I feel that the saying, all is for our good, is true. Henceforward, whatever one may say, I will be patient and won't take it in, because all is for our good. And I think that is a very, very powerful message, even though, you know, we have reiterated it so many times, acceptance of whatever comes in life to be taken as God's prasadam. But this is something that people always find it difficult to accept, isn't it?
That's because of our old conditioning. No, that doesn't leave so easily. That doesn't. So it's a continuous process, you know, where we are gaining the wisdom or knowledge. We are applying it in our life. And always there will be a pull of your past. That will always be there. But if you are aware that it is there, it's easier to manage rather than unconsciously being controlled by it.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Correct. Because Swami says that, you know, your human birth has come after so many janmas of evolution. And Bhagwan used to say that, you know, if someone is getting this thought of stealing, then you should tell, okay, it is because I was a cat in
possibly
I was a cat in some birth, you know, and that is the reason why.
And at, in this birth, at least we can step back and actually see with empathy.
Yes.
It is not with the identification with that,
yes,
that nature, but it's like, you know, you understood.
Yes.
So you are able to step back.
Step back, absolutely. Mm. Wow. So I know there is, if you look at this entire chapter, the second segment, 2.2 that we discussed, Bhagwan beautifully talks about how we should not engage ourselves with anything negative when it comes to the divine.
Yeah.
Focus on your positive, because I think Swami is very clearly saying that utilize that time only for holy purposes. Don't waste it. You have nothing to do with the good and bad in others. Instead of wasting the time, you should utilize it to discard the bad and develop the good in you. I think that is as simply as it can be put, but it is the most profoundest thing, I guess, about how we should spend our time. So probably we will move on to the next segment. We will listen to it, and we will have time to discuss in the next segment of Vahini Satsang. But let's listen to what Bhagwan has given us in the chapter 3 of Sandeha Nivarini. And dear listeners, even as you listen to this, please do contemplate on it and share your thoughts. We will take in your perspectives and your questions as we discuss this forward in the coming sessions of Sandeha Nivarini. So let's listen to what Bhagwan has written in chapter 3 of Sandeha Nivarini.
Oh, when did you arrive? You were not visible anywhere outside. Are you well?
I came 2 days ago. I see a lot of crowd and noise everywhere. I came from my place to avoid all this. But here too, I am seeing the same. But once I entered inside, I found it peaceful, restful and blissful. That is why I was in the hall. It is as quiet inside as it is restless outside.
What is special in this? It is natural. Where there is jaggery, there gather the ants. This is the difference between outside and inside. That is the characteristic. That is how it is.
Swami, I do not understand what you say. If you can tell me in detail, I shall listen and enjoy.
Dear one, you yourself said, didn't you, that there is an outside and an inside. Well, those are what we call Bahya Prapancham and Antara Prapancham, the external world and the internal world. Now you tell me your idea about both these worlds.
You want it to come from my mouth itself? It would be so good if you speak.
Well, dear one, making the questioner himself give out the answers is the ancient methodology of teaching. If those who question themselves give the answers, they would clearly understand the subject. There is a difference between lecturing the students and eliciting answers from them. It is through the latter method that the rishis in the olden days enabled their disciples to understand Vedanta. So come on, speak, let us see.
Do you ask me to speak of the objects I have seen with the eye?
Not only the eye. Tell me all that you have experienced and known through all the senses of cognition, the eye, the ear, and so on.
Earth, sky, water, sun, moon, wind, fire, stars, clouds, mountains, hills, trees, rivers, women, men, children, old people, animals, birds, heat and cold, the happy and the miserable, births and deaths and diseases. Like these, I have seen many.
Enough, enough, that's enough. That is the prapancha. Did you see it only today? Did it exist yesterday? Will it exist tomorrow?
Why do you ask me so, Swami? Will it not be like this for years to come? Who knows for how long it will exist, or since how long it has existed?
You said that nobody knows since how long it has existed. That is what we speak of as anadi, beginningless. This external world is beginningless. When there is an external, there must be an internal, is it not? Well, have you ever seen a cinema?
What do you mean, ever seen? Why? Swami, the cinema too is a part of the prapancham, isn't it?
What did you see? Tell me.
I have seen many wonderful pictures on the screen. I have heard numerous sounds and witnessed any number of experiences of joy and sorrow.
I have seen, you say. The screen is one. The picture is another. Did you see both?
Yes.
Did you see the screen and the picture both at the same time?
How is that possible, Swami? When the pictures are seen, the screen is not visible. When the screen is seen, the pictures are not seen.
Right. Do both the screen and the pictures exist always?
No. The screen is permanent. The pictures come and go.
As you say, the screen is permanent and the pictures come and go. For this permanent and impermanent, we use the words sthiram and asthiram, nityam and anityam, charam and aksharam. Shall I ask another question? Does the picture fall on the screen, or does the screen fall on the picture? Which is the basis for what?
The pictures fall on the screen, so for the picture, the screen is the basis.
So too, the external world, which is like the picture, has no permanence. It changes. The internal world is fixed. It does not change. The external has the internal as its basis.
So Swami, are you calling this ksharam and aksharam, nityam and anityam?
Yes, my boy. You were speaking now of pictures. Do these have names and forms?
Haven't they? It is only because they have names and forms that the story is understood. Then only do we recollect Ramayana and Bharatam. There is no formless name and nameless form.
Good. That is well said. Where there is form, there must be name. And where there is name, there must be form. Both these are connected with each other. We refer to this relationship as avinabhava sambandham.
So I think there are so many concepts here. It's a very packed
chapter.
And I think there are really very deep concepts. Swami is bringing in the concept of what is permanent, what is not, which is the essence of Vedanta, I would think. A lot of Upanishads focus on this, right? What is Atma, Anatma, Nitya, Anitya. And we refer to this inside and outside in the previous segment, and here Bhagwan begins with that Bahya Prapancham and Anta Prapancham, and then you have Bhagwan bringing the concept of Sakara and Nirakara also. Swami comes to that also. So I think there are very, very beautiful aspects of our spiritual understanding that we really need to dwell on. Time is running out, so definitely we will continue this. So dear listeners, if you have any thoughts on these three, four central ideas that Bhagwan is elaborating on in this chapter 3 of Sandhya Nivarani, please do send us your comments, your thoughts. Or if you have a particular query on any of these topics, you can send us your questions and we'll pray to Swami and deliberate so that we walk on this path with deeper understanding and with greater conviction. Thank you so much, Brothers Ganesh and Brother Srinivas Rao, for joining us.
Thank you, Brother.
For this beautiful session of dwelling on his discourses. So with that, dear listeners, it's time to wind up this session of Vahini Satsang. As always, you can write to us. Our email is listener@radiosai.org. We look forward to your comments and feedback on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Once again, 9393-258-258. Offering to Bhagwan this session of Swadhyaya and Nididhyasana, we offer at his lotus feet these precious moments. And thank you so much. Looking forward to joining you in the coming weeks. Sai Ram.